everyone. Welcome to the Self-Published Wrong Podcast. I am your host, Andrea Pearson, and I'm joined today by my husband.
Hi, I'm Nolan.
And we are at our house again. We've been home for a little while, actually. Mm-hmm. The last episode with Kevin was recorded in that very echoey, low-quality studio of an apartment we were staying in.
Yes.
And that actually went live the day we came home, so...
Did it?
Yeah, so we've been home for a little while now. And we're going to be giving a recap of what we learned from the conference next week. Just some basic key points that we went over. So for this episode 37, while I was in the Vegas conference at the Business Masterclass that's put on by Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush, I did a bunch of live videos for my BookBub Promotions and More group. And we're going to be listening to those and giving you our opinions and just thoughts on those, because I know a bunch of our listeners aren't in the group and vice versa. So that's what we're going to be doing for this episode. And then next week we'll be doing the recap on different things that we learned. And I'm going to tell you right now, and I know I'll probably mention this next year or next week, this conference, it's so valuable. It costs money, but you know what? The stuff you learn will save you so much money, and it gets your business. I mean, really, really focuses on business. That's why it's called a business masterclass. And they teach you all sorts of fantastic things. I went last year as a student, and they invited me to come back as an instructor this year. And
next year.
Yeah, that's true. They invited me to come back again next year as an instructor. And the things that I was just overwhelmed last year. There's so much stuff that we went over. And this year, it solidified it for me. So I'm like, I'm going to encourage people to go 2 years in a row just so that they can learn, you know, and actually implement everything. But because it's so much stuff, I was very overwhelmed even this year again. Anyway, okay, so do you have any announcements to make?
Not until the end.
Okay, that's fine. Did I already tell everybody I finished Forbidden Knowledge? It's with my editor now. I can't remember. Lizzie series book 5, and I started writing book 6 today. Oh, Demon of Darkness. And by the way, Forbidden Knowledge, that will be my 51st title published since we've been doing this, and that's just under 8 years. And I've had a lot of people be like, holy cow, you must be so prolific. No, not really. I average between 4 and 5 novels a year in my slower years. And in my faster, better years, I do about 7, you know, and not just novels. This includes short stories, children's illustrated books, novellas, things like that. It's every bit of title and piece of IP, intellectual property I have. I have 51 titles now. And I mean, if you don't get started, you're never going to get there. But looking back, I was like, holy cow, I've done a whole lot. But the day in, day out was really stressful, thinking I wasn't being prolific enough. But the point is, if you work and you do the best that you can, in like 5 years or 10 years, you're going to have a whole lot of back,
Backlist.
A backlist to work with and to advertise and make money on. It's not just about what you're doing right now and how much money you're making today. It's also about what you can do in the future. Anyway, we've actually been learning a whole lot of things about Kaylytics and KDP Rocket, and we'll probably do
an episode on that.
And yeah,
we'll do these two a couple episodes, and we'll go back to movies for a bit while we digest.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn on Kaylytics. It's very intensive, and I'm sure some of you've been using it, but I know a bunch of you haven't, and it's going to be a game changer, I think, just because it gives you so much powerful information in Amazon itself, which is where we all make money, right?
Yeah, about 80% of it.
Yeah, pretty much.
75, something like that.
Okay, so I have 3 announcements. The first is go to storybundle.com/nano. And this is the 2018 NaNoWriMo Writing Tools Bundle curated by Kevin J. Anderson. We talked a bit about it last week, but I wanted to mention it again just because there's less than a month left on it, and you've really got to go grab this bundle because it's got some powerful stuff in there. I'll just give you a couple of titles. Kevin J. Anderson and his wife Rebecca Mesta wrote a book titled Writing as a Team Sport, and Craig Martell has his book Become a Successful Indie Author in there. Joanna Penn has her new book The Healthy Writer in it. Christine Catherine Rush has The Secrets of Success, and Dean Wesley Smith has How to Write a Novel in 10 Days. And that's actually very applicable for what a lot of what we're going to be talking about today and listening to today is prolificness. and writing quickly. Anyway, so go grab that if you haven't already, storybundle.com/nano. It's it'll be seriously helpful for you with your writing career. And then the next announcement is the Truly Epic Fantasy Bundle, curated by Kevin as well. That's storybundle.com/fantasy. And most of you probably aren't fantasy readers, but if you are, that's got books by Kevin, me, Lindsay Broker, etc. in it. Tons of fantasy books. It's a good little set of novels. And then my last announcement is this. My presentation from my conference is now available as a course. It is $10. We'll be raising that price to $25 here soon. So if you want to go and take advantage of that, go to selfpublishedstrongcourses.com and click on view all courses and you'll find it there. It's called Amazon Algorithms and Automation Sequences. And the subtitle is Using Algorithms and Sequences to Charge Your Author Career and Get Results. And I basically talk about, you know, if you have problems with how to tell if you're having problems with your algorithms, how to fix them, and why you want algorithms on your side, why you want your algorithms to be spot on. And then, so basically finding readers that are your correct readers and then using your automation sequence to convert them into true fans. And so I was told several times that it was worth the entire $750 entry fee for the conference, just my presentation alone. And guess what? You can get it for just $10.
Sounds good to me.
I know. You should listen to it.
Not just because I get part of the money.
But also because?
It's good information.
Yeah. Yeah. So go grab it now before the price goes up. And I'm absolutely positive it will be very helpful for you. I had a lot of questions from authors on that topic. I had a lot of questions from authors on the topic of doing blind testing. So testing your covers and your descriptions without readers knowing that that's what you're doing. Because if you ask somebody to tell you what they think, it puts them in a different frame of mind than a buying frame of mind. I go over all of that in my Am I Ready course that is actually still free. I need to be raising the price on that, but it's free for now. So that's another one for you to take advantage of. Okay, so I accidentally just interrupted us. I got distracted by a post on Facebook while I was opening this up. But what we're going to be doing here is we're going to be listening to the live videos. And then Josh, our audio visual guy, is going to be taking the audio from those videos and spiffing it up a little bit so that's a little bit higher quality than what's on Facebook and putting it over what we listen to here. And we are going to give comments after on each of these videos. So the first one is Mark Leslie Lefebvre, and he's actually the one who gave me the idea for it. We were on a panel on social media, and he was talking about all the different ways that he manages his social media accounts and everything. And I was like, I don't do any of that. And then he said that one of the things he does is he does a lot of live videos, and he gave me so many fantastic ideas. And so I'm really excited about that. But anyway, so we're going to go ahead and listen to that and then give our feedback on it, our thoughts on it. Hi, everyone. I'm here with Mark Leslie Lefebvre. Can you tell him a little bit about yourself?
Hi, I'm an author. I'm a horror author under the name Mark Leslie, and I'm a publishing dude. I used to work for Kobo. I work with authors directly. I work with Draft to Digital now, and I love to help authors with different techniques. For example, we were talking about social media.
Yeah, and so he's going to talk to you guys about organizing your social media posts. So if you want to be posting on more than one place, he's going to tell you how to do that.
So I'll start with if you're using a tool like TweetDeck, and that's just one of them, you've got Buffer and you've got other tools you can use. What you can do is you can go in and find interesting articles that are pertinent to you and your reading audience, not necessarily by my book, but something that's related to it. So for example, one of my books is Macabre Montreal, just came out. So on the Macabre Montreal Facebook page or on my @MarkLeslie Twitter account, I'll find interesting articles about, you know, something going on in the city of Montreal or an interesting ghost story from Montreal. And I'll share that, but what I'm going to do is on Monday morning, I'll go in and find five or six articles that I'm going to share over the next 5 or 6 days. I'll schedule them through TweetDeck to Twitter. I'll schedule the same post through Facebook on that Facebook page where you can actually schedule the post in advance. And then what I can do is I'll pick certain times during my day when I'm not writing or I'm not doing other work with authors. And I'll say, now I'm going to respond to any questions or queries or comments. And then that way you're not dipping in and out of social media all the time, because we know the most important thing you should be doing is working on your book. So yeah. schedule your time for writing, but maybe schedule some time for pre-planning that social media so you can still react to people live and be a genuine person, but you can also share valuable content without having to take up 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there, because that 15 minutes is really half an hour.
Yeah, and you recommend people respond to comments and things like that when they...
I mean, yeah, if it's pertinent, just saying thanks or, even just a thumbs up or a smile or a laugh or something like that. And I find I do social media to engage with people because, we're in this together, all of us. So that's why I like to respond.
Yeah. Okay, so that's Mark and good tip.
Thanks, Andrew.
I was excited about that during the panel just now. So, all right, we'll talk to y'all later. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, so are any thoughts? What do you think about what he...
He makes good points about using social media, not having social media use you.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people get caught up in it and all the responding. I mean, being efficient, having a plan when you go into your social media accounts to do stuff, have it be pertinent to your career.
Yeah, like he has multiple groups and fan pages that fit around the genre of his books. And he posts things that fit those genres and books, basically tying everything back to his stories in some way and keeping the discussions rolling. And he's been finding it beneficial. And he was saying that he takes like 1 hour once a week and just sets everything up for the whole week. And I'm like, oh, I need to get that organized. That requires discipline. But it's obviously doing well for him. It's giving him a lot of benefit. So that's really good.
Yeah. So, I mean, he has a specific time he sets aside to do it, and then he spends the rest of his time engaging with people if he does go on. But he has that very specifically in mind when he goes into it. He has goals. And he engages them by talking about not his books, but things that are related. So, you build a relationship, and then when you release a book, they want to buy, instead of just saying, buy my book. Your group isn't about buying his books. It's about...
Yep.
Sharing a common interest.
Yeah, exactly.
Which happens to his books happen to be a part of.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can't just go hammer people about buying your books and talking about your books all the time.
Yeah.
But it's still related. So everything he does has a purpose related to his books, just somewhat indirectly.
Yeah.
And that helps.
Yeah,
Helps
sales.
Helps form cohesive groups.
Yep. All right. So the next video is Damon Courtney from Book Funnel. And it's funny because watching this video, he's like slouching in his chair. This guy is super tall.
Yeah, he's like 5'6", 5'5".
6'5", something like that. Yeah. And he looks super short in here. Do not let that...
Mark and him are slightly taller than me.
Yeah.
Well, he's more tall, but...
Yeah, he's a little bit taller than Mark. But they're both pretty tall guys. And yeah, so let's listen. This is a really, really good tip he gives of a service that BookFunnel has. And I just died when I heard it. I was like, oh my goodness. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and start that.
Hi everyone, it's Andrea Pearson here, and I am with Damon Courtney from
Book Funnel.
And he's pretty awesome. He's going to talk to us about something that I had never heard about with Book Funnel. It's called print codes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So Book Funnel, we do ebook distribution. You can go to our website and look all that up. That's not the interesting part. So the print codes feature was something that we developed just before RWA this year with some of our romance authors who wanted to go and take, some of them wanted to go and take just business cards or postcards and give away a copy of their book. You know, when you go to cons, you go to library readings and things like that, you're seeing readers live and in person, and a lot of authors really like doing that, and they wanted to be able to give them a copy of their book, the first book in their series. It never hesitate to take an opportunity to hook a reader on your series, right? And then also a lot of authors were taking, they wanted to be able to sell their ebooks. You know, when you go to a lot of conferences, if you go to live events, you can absolutely print copies and take paperbacks and things like that with you, but they tend to get really heavy. They're hard to take on a plane. And so authors had kept emailing us and were looking for ways to take their ebooks in their pockets with them. They wanted to be able to take them and either sell them or give them away when they were meeting with people. So we developed this feature called print codes, where you can go through BookFunnel, print a batch of codes, and each code is unique code that's only good for one book. And I actually have one here. My friend Carrie Kilgore, she actually sets up at cons and farmers markets and things like that. She has a lot of fiction out there. I think she said she's got like 30 or 40 books out now.
Nice.
And so she takes, here, I'm just going to put one up here so you can kind of see it. But so this is, you can see down here, she's got the code printed and she's just done it on a little label that she's printed on the book cover, which is a gorgeous cover. And
is that like a sticker or is, that's a sticker.
Yeah, so she did it as a sticker, and we actually kind of have some videos that show you how to do it. It was the cheapest way that we could find to do it. There are absolutely printers out there who will print the whole thing, and each code is uniquely printed on the back of the card.
That's more expensive, right?
Yeah, it's gonna cost you more per card. And so, you know, we advise authors, if they're just kind of testing the waters and playing with it, try printing up a sticker. This one is a white, you know, you can kind of see it's got a little white sticker. You can actually buy transparent ones, and they look almost seamless. You can just stick them to the front or stick them to the back. And so the nice thing is that when you hand that to somebody, they go to a quick little website, they type in their code, they get their copy, and then that's it. The code is dead. That can't be reused. It can't be given to anybody else.
And it's cool because you guys give the email addresses that they use to the authors.
Yes.
Not to add to the newsletter list, but what do you guys recommend people do with those?
Yes. Oh, well, you can. So there is an option when they go through and they put in the code, you can say, give them the option to join my mailing list if they want to. And, you know, a lot of people that you meet in person, they are going to want to just to see what you're about, right?
Yeah.
But even if they don't join your mailing list, you still get the email address. You can't add them to your mailing list, but you can use that to send a follow-up and say, hey, thanks so much for getting my book. It was great meeting you at the library, and I hope to see you again sometime soon. So you absolutely can do things like that. It's really, really cool.
And one thing that I really liked, he was saying, just carry them in, like, your purse or your wallet. And when, you know, everybody, we meet random people, you know, like a cashier. So what do you do for a living? I'm an author, and here's a free book.
Yeah.
So you carry them in your wallet, you know, little book cards, bookmarks, and they get a free book. You know, I love that.
Yeah, we see readers every single week who this is the first time they've ever gotten a free book. We live in our little indie bubble, and we think that, God, just everybody gets free books all the time. And that is true for a lot of readers. But people that you meet randomly just bumping around during your day, you know, going to a kid's birthday party, talking and saying, oh, I'm an author. Oh, what do you write? I write science fiction. I love science fiction.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I've got something for you. And for them, they don't get, you know, free books shoved in their face all day long.
Yeah.
And somebody that you meet live and in person and have a personal connection with, even if just for a few minutes, they are going to be more likely to go pick up that book and give you a try.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Anyway, well, thank you.
Yeah, great. Thanks for being here.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
Comments?
Well, it sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it's valuable. I mean, how many times do I talk to people about my books?
There's been a few times where they're like, "Oh, you're an author.
Do you have a book? Do you have a book?
Bookmark or something?
Business card?"
Yeah, and then we don't have them. So,
because
it would be awesome to attach that. That's really handy.
Yeah,
I mean that is a thing that actually happens in real life. It's not just a video.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, like, it's a real thing.
Yeah,
yeah. So that would be nice to do.
Yeah.
And BookFunnel is good anyways.
BookFunnel is absolutely fantastic. I think every author, if they do not have it, they need to have it. And one thing that he said in the conference that he didn't mention in the video, the codes for people to put in to get that free book, they are only uppercase letters.
Oh, that's nice.
And so readers don't have to be, is that a lowercase L? Or, you know, I mean, it's all uppercase. And I think they do have numbers included.
It's not like L.
One. Nope.
Zero, O,
oh.
Zero, O, O, zero.
Yes, exactly. So it's not like that. So the codes are only uppercase letters. Anyway, okay. So the next one is the Passive Guy from the Passive Voice blog. And this one's more informational for people who don't know who he is. There's not a whole lot of tips in this one, but it's still a good interview.
So yeah, if you don't know who Passive Guy is, then you need to know who Passive Guy is.
Exactly. So let's go ahead and listen to that one.
Hi, everyone. It's Andrea Pearson. I'm here with the Passive Guy from...
The old Passive Guy, yeah.
From the Passive Voice blog.
I look terrible on your phone screen.
I think you look fine.
It's not the way I see myself in my imagination, you know.
Do you see yourself at 25 or...
Yeah, yeah, you know. Cool, hair, more hair than that, you know, and not so much around the middle, you know. I mean,
well, they can't see the middle, so all they see is your head.
Yeah, forever. whatever you do, don't point
don't
down.
Don't drop it down. Yeah. Okay, so I wanted to ask him about, so basically why and how you started the blog and how long ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It was...
Actually, hold on. What is the blog? Because people are going to be watching this who don't know what your blog is.
What kind of audience do you have for your
They're
videos?
Mostly authors.
Thank you.
I know.
They're not the right sort of authors.
They should all know.
Okay, good. I write a blog called The Passive Voice, and I have an alter ego there called Passive Guy, or PG. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing it since, is it 10 years?
Nice.
Maybe 10, yeah, I mean, a long time.
Wow.
Yeah. That can't say, that range. And the reason I started it was my wife is an author and has been for some time, and I helped her get her rights back from her publisher. Mm-hmm. By going through their contracts, which were not well written, and finding some things that
kind of
disturbed them, and yeah. I said, well, you know, why don't you just let her go, and
nice.
And we'll sign a non-disclosure agreement that mm-hmm. we won't tell all the other authors about the problems of the contract.
Nice.
And so anyway, and I was looking around for some place online that had the kind of information that I had figured out a little bit on my own, and that, you know, that would help authors understand some of the legal sides of their of their business, as well as the business side. And I was excited about the whole self-publishing.
Yeah.
And I found a lot of great websites and blogs and so forth, but not one that quite sort of brought it together the way
you wanted it to be.
I kind of would have liked to have it together. So sorry for the long words, but
oh, that's fine.
I am a lawyer. Huh. Okay. You can always tell who's going to be a lawyer in any first grade class because they never shut up. They're talking all the time.
Okay, so how do you find the articles?
I have basically a bunch of RSS feeds that are aggregated into some readers, and I'm adding and culling from time to time on that. And so I just kind of scan through the RSS feeds every day, or almost every day, and just look at stuff that I find interesting. Mm-hmm. And then I get a fair number of suggestions from
authors. I've given suggestions.
Yeah. See, you're a great author. From authors who say, hey, I think this might interest you. And they're very good about finding stuff for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. It's
thepassivevoice.com.
It's automatically saved my computer, so I don't ever have to remember.
I know. And I wanted it to be theactivevoice.com, but the URL was already taken. So
Passive Voice works great.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and so what he does is he basically takes these articles that are applicable to writers in some way. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's like the entertainment industry, sometimes about Amazon, but not necessarily about writers, but it applies to us in some way. And then he kind of takes the essence of them and just quotes them, and it sometimes brings out these really great discussions with authors by regularly, and it's a lot
of
fun.
Comments are the best part.
Yeah. So go check out his blog, and thank you.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
So comments from you?
We've been following Passive Guy for a long time. So if you want to stay on top of industry news, having to do as much digging, then just follow Passive Guy's blog. He does it for you.
Yeah, exactly. And the way I do it is I have it set up on Twitter to come to my phone so that I'm just on my phone. I don't even need to go to the blog or anything. And then his tweet messages get sent out. And that's been very helpful. And he's actually a copyright attorney, and he gives really good feedback and stuff like that on copyrights and contracts and things like that. Not copyright. He's a contract attorney, and he does copyright stuff too. But anyway, so my thing with this is get involved in the discussions there. I'm sure a lot of you or all of you already know about his blog, but people start getting to know each other through the discussion, and opportunities arise. It's a great opportunity, or a great networking opportunity. I am tired. Anyway, so, okay, the next one is Kevin J. Anderson. And if you haven't watched this video, it's actually pretty funny. Kevin
doesn't know where to look.
Yeah, he doesn't know where to look. He is Kevin is a goofball when he is tired.
And also when he is well rested.
That's true. All right, so let's go ahead and listen to this one.
Hi, everyone. Andrea Pearson here with Kevin J. Anderson.
Kevin J. Anderson. Yes, looking at... Yes, here we are. I'm not looking at the right part there.
Yeah, the camera's right here.
I'm looking
here.
At you.
We just got off a panel. We've been at a conference. We're kind of tired.
And we're tired, and it's after lunch. But we are still enthusiastic about writing and connecting with our readers and writing stories and catching up on the emails that we left behind during this whole week of busy stuff. So
those poor readers.
Okay, ask your questions.
My questions. Let's see. I want to talk about brainstorming plot. You write really fast. How do you brainstorm plot that quickly?
Well, I go to sleep at night and don't sleep very much, so I lie there awake and go, okay, what's the inspiration for this, and how does she meet the vampire, and how does he kill somebody, and and I just kind of mull it around. And sometimes when I'm just starting, I will I'll go out for a hike. I love hiking. I live in Colorado, and I'll just go for a hike for half a day, and just I have a recorder with me, and as ideas come to me, oh, we could do this, or how about this connection, or this character did that, and I just record them because I'll never remember them if I'm just thinking of it. And I like to write notes down, and in fact I just edited this gigantic epic fantasy, and it's a trilogy, and this is book one. And so as I'm editing the final draft of book one, I have this second document that's open, and every time an idea occurs to me as I'm reading my own book, and it's like, oh well, this character's got to do this, or this character's got to go to this place, or don't forget the talisman that was hidden here. And I just keep a running list of that, and then like months later I read that as I'm plotting book two, and I go, oh, I forgot all about that. I mean, really, I forget about so many of these great ideas, so I'm glad I wrote them down.
Notes and things like that. Let's see. How do you stay motivated to write a lot?
Deadlines.
Yes, that's pretty much
well, I mean, I kind of like to pay the bills, and you don't make any money unless you publish it. And but see, the other thing is, and non-writers don't understand this, they always tell me, like, Kevin, you work too hard. Just relax with us and play cards. Well, that's work. I like telling stories. I like writing and editing. These are my surrogate children, and I get to do horrible things to them. That's what's fun to me is the writing. So it's not like hard to be motivated. It's hard to take a break is what's hard.
Yeah. And how do you connect with your readers on your newsletter list?
Well, it's newsletter. I have a very active social media. I've got like 3 Facebook pages. I've got a Twitter account. I've got Instagram. I've got a blog. And I do a lot of things that have nothing to do with writing. I climb mountains, and I enjoy microbrew beer, and I also does Andrea. We do all kinds of beer all
definitely,
the time.
Definitely, especially while I'm pregnant.
Yes. Let's see. We have cats, and my wife and I do all kinds of, we travel a lot. And so I try to make me an interesting person rather than buy my book, which gets really boring. And the fans actually get invested in the, here's the mountain that you climbed, or and they'll send me suggestions of, have you done this trail? Or you know, you connect with them. Oh, and I'm a huge Rush fan, the rock band Rush. Yeah. And there are times when I'll at random throw out a line from a lyric from a Rush song that I really like. And I won't put any context. I'll just put tough times demand tough talk, demand tough hearts.
Yeah.
And then somebody else will, within seconds, post the next line in the song and the next line in the song. And you get all these Rush fans posting, and all my non-Rush fans are going, what in the world are they talking about?
Yeah.
But that connects me with this special group of people and they're very dedicated and diehard, and they read stuff.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you.
All right, everyone.
Deadline's over. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, well, next one.
Your thoughts?
There's a lot of stuff in there. Because he talks about, just like Mark did, related stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe not even related at all, but like in-group stuff, where you make relationships with people about stuff that's not exactly your book.
Yeah.
So for him, Rush, because he's from like the 70s, 60s, and 70s. I may or may not have a couple of Rush albums myself, but we won't talk about that. He talks about that. But the main question that we start off with was, how you write so much. And he basically writes down every idea.
Yeah.
I'm sure he doesn't use most of them, but he
probably not
writes them down. And so he's got an idea like pad. Or whatever he wants, like document.
Yeah.
So that he can always be working, and he doesn't have to sit around floundering.
Yep.
He's busy producing things, not busy thinking about producing things.
Yeah.
Because the other point he makes, which is one we make all the time, is you don't get paid unless you publish.
Yeah, that's what he said in the podcast last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, he made
like you actually about that. Put it up there.
Yeah.
And like we said, it's better to go through the whole process and learn all the lessons and what you're going to do differently. Because what if you write that amazing book and then you don't know how to freaking do it?
Yeah.
And you mess it up. Mess it up on stuff, on early stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And get that out of the way.
Yeah, no kidding. Enjoy your anonymity.
Enjoy your anonymity. Fail when you're small time.
Yeah, no kidding.
Succeed when you're big.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, and I loved what he was saying. Like when he was brainstorming a plot, like he says, I mean, he gets moving. He goes for walks. He goes for hikes. And then he grabs his recorder. He's like, well, what if this happened? What if she were to do this, you know? And the good thing about using a recorder is it's great because you don't have to grab a pen and notepad and you can just talk it and you're faster at talking than writing. And so you don't lose the ideas easily. And so that's one of the things that we talked quite a bit about. Like Christine and Dean, their live videos are coming up next, and we talked about being a prolific writer with both of them. And you got to learn how to do it quickly because, okay, so we'll go over that in just a little bit, but we're going to go on to Christine's video right now.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, everyone. I'm here with Christine Catherine Rush, who is also known by a lot of different names.
I am.
She's got a fantastic blog. If you haven't followed her blog before, she does a lot of really cool stuff for authors. She's very blunt.
Yeah, you can find it at chriswrites.com, K-R-I-S-Writes.com.
Yeah, and I've got a couple of questions for Chris. So yesterday we were talking about being a prolific writer, and you told me a little anecdote about people who clean streets. Could you tell them that?
Sure. I live here in Las Vegas, and we were walking to the conference that morning, and there had been a parade the night before and everything else along the route that we walked, a big festival. And I knew when I went to bed that night, I looked out and there was garbage on the street, there were still people. By the time I got up the next morning, which was 7, the streets were clean. There was nothing. There weren't even bags of garbage sitting around. And I thought, you know, I don't know about most people who clean streets, but I bet they're not happy about doing it every day. They don't get up and think, yay, I get to clean the street. And, you know, but they worked and they worked hard and they got it done. And writers usually should get up and think, yay, I have to, you know, write this particular scene. And we don't. Yeah. And we don't have that kind of enjoyment and we don't work hard. And I don't know why. Because writing's a lot more fun than cleaning streets.
Yeah, so we were just talking about how important it is if you want to be successful as an author to just do your job. I mean, your job is writing, right? And then also, how many words do you write and how many books do you publish a year? How many words do you write a day?
I have a chronic illness, and when it flares up, I write about 3,000 words a day, and it's 5 to 6 days a week, and if I'm healthy and feeling good, it's 4 to 5 to 6 to I don't know how many.
Deadlines, but, if you have them.
Yep, and how much, you know, extra time I can squeeze in.
Yeah. And you take a day off a week.
I take a day off a week.
That's good.
It just keeps me healthier, to be honest.
That's nice. I've had a lot of people say, you need to be writing every day. I'm like, I can't write every day. I need to take a break.
Well, I actually need to consume stories more as produce
true.
Stories.
Yeah.
So I take a day, go see some movies, read a book.
Yeah, that was my next question, actually. So with you writing so quickly, how do you come up with plot? So
it's a muscle. You just develop it over time.
Good point. Yeah.
And so I don't even think about it anymore, but it took years to do it. And I used to plant myself in front of the computer and have a timer across the room and take everything else off the desk and off the computer so the only thing I could do was write. And I have a hummingbird brain.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this interests me, that interests me, and this interests me. By taking that away, I got bored really quickly, so I just started making up stories, and that's how I do it.
That's really good. I love the muscle, because I'm a fast writer, but I haven't exercised the plot muscle as much, so that's really good to hear. I like that.
It's a muscle.
All right, well, thank you, and
thank you.
See y'all
Bye,
later.
Everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Okay, comments?
Go through the process. It's actually very similar.
Yeah.
A different take on it. But, practicing completing projects, getting ideas is something you practice doing.
Yep.
And finishing projects is something you practice doing too. She doesn't just write 5,000 words a day. She writes 5,000 words a day in a book that gets completed or a short story that gets completed and published.
Yeah. Yep. And while you're listening, you're like, it's not a muscle. It's the ability
I know. We are what we continually do.
Yeah. And like I've discovered writing for me, I'm a fast writer. I'm prolific and it's really easy to get my books done. I haven't been as, you know, prolific as she has. But, you know, while we were driving down to Vegas and driving back up, we brainstormed my next two series completely, you know, where I can actually sit down and start writing those as soon as I'm done with this last book in the series. And that's really exciting, you know, and the more you're doing it, the easier it comes and the faster it comes.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, pantsers, but you should have a framework. It really will help, I think.
I think
most people aren't 100% pantsers anyway.
No, I'm not.
But it's important to work ahead. Smooth the path for you. So yeah, when you start writing, there's not as many interruptions.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to have to be like, oh, I got to go do this, or oh, I have to go write my plot out some more. I mean, sometimes it's fine because that helps you get going. You like look at your outline, you're like, okay, where am I? And then you pick up, you know?
Yeah. And Dean is actually, he is a pantser completely. He calls it writing into the dark. He never knows.
Interesting.
But he still writes 14 to 15 novels a year.
Yeah. I mean, some people are 100% pantsers. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep.
And they can be really successful.
And that's the thing. You have to discover what your personality, how are you
prolific? Yeah. You're going to have to try and fail at a lot of things.
Yeah.
And
before
that's something
you
figure else
it out.
People need to put the time in to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I was trying to pants my first book, and I had no idea how. I just kept getting stuck and stuck and stuck, and finally I realized it's because I have no idea where I'm going.
And you may become more of a pantser later on.
Yeah, I think most people naturally
understand intuitively without having to think about plot structures. They're just doing it because they've done it so much and
watched it and read it and consumed
exactly. And so it becomes a subconscious thing.
Yeah.
And that's great because that'll speed you up, because then all that automatic stuff gets pushed into your subconscious, and then you don't have to think about.
Yeah.
I mean, thinking takes a lot of energy.
Yeah.
When it becomes part of you, and it's just something you like, any other repetitive motion, like maybe like a job or something where you're like doing something, like you're like, wow, I did like 30 of them and I didn't even think about it. It never even entered my conscious mind, and you're like done.
Yep.
You know, it can be that way, but I mean, you're still being guided by what you want in your story. So it's not like, you know, you're asleep doing it, of course.
Yeah.
It's something that you're doing, but...
Yeah.
Or like running. I don't know if you're running, you're like, oh, wow, I ran a lot farther than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And most writers that are pantsers will eventually become a little bit more out... Actually, I don't know if it even goes that way. I think a lot of pantsers stay pantsers, but outliners, they learn how to pants more as they get more experience with it.
Some pantsers may discover they need to do some framework.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because
if they want to be more prolific.
Yeah, they'll start and just start writing and then realize they have to do a lot of revisions and crap like that. And then just be like, maybe if I have just like a general clue where I'm going, that might be helpful. But again, some people, it's a continuum. Most people are somewhere in the middle. Almost nobody's 100% one way or the other. You could be the, natural storyteller person that doesn't have to ever write an outline in their whole life. But chances are you're not.
Yeah.
There's only one way to find out. To try it and fail, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to go on to Dean.
Okay.
He is the last live video. This is Dean Wesley Smith, and here we go.
Hi, everyone. I'm here with Dean Wesley Smith. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Awesome.
Punchy, but well.
Yes, you've been doing really good lately.
I've been trying.
Awesome. Okay, so I wanted to ask him a bunch of questions. He runs workshops, and I wanted to know how and why he started doing them.
The workshop started with Christine Catherine Rush and myself. We started at conventions. People said, well, you know so much about publishing, because we'd had a publishing house and everything else.
Yeah.
And so we were trying to relay that information to help people. And we started the Chris and Dean Show is what it was called. We didn't call it
awesome.
That, but they did. People did. And it was sort of like a stand-up comedy couple hours. And when we were traveling, people would ask us in, and do a couple, two or three hours ahead of a convention or something. And pretty soon we got tired of that and thought, well, let's just start doing them on the Oregon coast.
Yeah.
And then that morphed on the Oregon coast to the in-person workshops that are now down here in Vegas where we are right now.
Yeah.
And then... we went to online, which is teachable, and you can, if you're interested in that at all, just email me, email me at deanwesleysmith.com.
Oh, to find out about the classes,
Dean at deanwesleysmith.com, and I'll send you the links to the emails and to all the classes on teachable. There's a lot of them. There's a whole
And I'm going to put a plug for this conference, if that's okay.
That's great.
Okay, Business Masterclass.
We'll be doing this next
year.
It's
amazing. So if you guys, seriously, it's how I've actually, propelled my career forward. So Seriously, come next year if you can.
And she's been wonderful helping us. It's just been fantastic.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's just been fantastic.
Okay, so how about how many books and short stories do you write a year?
On average, since the indie world came in, you know, I've been basically doing my own magazine where I have a novel every month and four short stories every month.
Yeah.
But I average about 15 to 16 novels a year and about 50 short stories a year.
And you know, I tell authors they should be doing that, and they look at me like you're crazy. Well, but guess what? It's not crazy.
No, it's just I'm a very slow typist. Oh. I just spend more time in the chair than most people do.
Yeah.
That's all. That's really, there's no secret. If you spend more time in the chair, you produce more words. Oh my.
And you think being prolific is a good thing for authors?
In this modern world?
Oh yeah.
It's critical.
Yeah.
It's just critical.
Yeah.
In the old world, this never, I wrote 1 year in traditional publishing. Mm-hmm. I had 108, but my best year in traditional publishing was 18 books.
That's pretty impressive in traditional.
That was incredible in traditional. And it was through, I think I had 7 or 8 publishers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had to have a lot of publishers and doing all kinds of stuff and pen names and everything else. It was crazy.
Okay, so one last quick question.
Sure.
How do you manage business and writing? Because you've got a huge business.
We have a large business. We have very, very good people working for us. Allison Longware runs the entire company.
Yeah.
My job is to handle the money and the workshops, which is part of the large business.
Yeah.
I teach the workshops. Chris and I actually teach the workshops. And then mostly it's just that. I just kind of handle the money and handle
writing
the email.
You're not doing other stuff.
Yeah, the rest of it's writing.
Yeah.
And, you know, all I need to be very, very prolific is 3 or 4 hours a day.
Yeah.
So it doesn't take 8 hours. It's just 3 or 4 hours. So.
Yeah, and like Chris said when I interviewed her, your writing is your job. So do your job.
Yeah. But I consider it fun.
Yeah.
You know, I think my actual job is dealing with the money for WMC Publishing. That's a job.
Yeah, no kidding.
But you know, the writing is just fun. It's just great fun.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Wow, my pleasure. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
All right. Comments?
That is an insane amount of work.
Yes.
Even when during traditional, that's
You heard he did 18 one year in traditional, and that was with publishers and
And all that business, all that nonsense.
Yeah,
that's a lot of work. So,
it is.
I mean, he's racking up wins every time he publishes something.
Yeah, one thing that I thought was pretty awesome, I mean, he is prolific. He's got a set schedule that his readers know to expect. Every single month, he releases a magazine that has one novel and four short stories from him. And that's great because that's keeping him on task, you know? So he's like, I don't have any excuses. One thing, though, we need to remember again is Dean and Chris and Kevin, this is what they do full time, and they don't have children. None of them have children. Rebecca, Kevin's wife, has a son. But so this is my reminder to me because we have little kids. Like, I'm not going to be able to get where they are while we are, I'm pregnant, having kids and all that. But the thing is, like, they did this even when they were working. They did this back in the 70s and 80s when they had jobs, you know?
And typewriters.
Yeah, steampunk laptops. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm going to say right now, and I was in one of these Facebook groups and somebody was saying, is it possible to make money? I think we talked about this a little while ago. And I said, yes, of course it's possible to make money. You've got to be prolific. And I had a couple people drag me over the coals. They're like, I'm tired of everybody saying, write a bunch of crap. And I'm like, you know what? These people, Christine sells short stories and novels still. And she sells short stories to anthologies every single year. She's made a lot of money. They've won multiple awards. They're multiple, you know, New York Times and USA Today bestselling authors. They are not writing crap. And I'm like, well, what's the difference between them and the indie authors that are, and they are indie authors, you know, the difference between them and the indie authors who are writing quickly, but nobody likes their books. I mean, I've been thinking a lot about this and we did discuss this. Do you remember what our conclusion was?
No.
Oh, it was that they studied story and they studied craft and they figured out how to write without just writing.
Well, I mean, exactly. You're like, I just don't want to shove out crap. Well, they learned to write good stories quickly. That does start out slow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think people just,
They're not giving themselves time. They're not being patient.
They're not. I mean, it's just like who expects to do something right the first time, especially we talked about this. Writing a story can be very complex, depending, and they can be extremely complex depending on how crazy you want to get.
Yeah.
even a straightforward story, a novel that's 75,000 words, I don't know what the average, 60,000, 75, yeah, somewhere mm-hmm. in there. That's a lot of work. That's a yeah. lot of words. 70,000 words.
Yeah.
You put 70,000 words into a document.
Mm-hmm.
You had to choose the order that they are in.
Yeah.
And it had to make sense, and people want to pick that up and read that. That's mm-hmm. a lot of parts.
Yeah.
What else do you do that has 70,000 parts that you try to do?
Yeah.
Learn what it means to make that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of ingredients.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why do readers read your genre? You know, put that into your stories, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah, you got to do, I mean, there's a lot of work. And then, but once you know,
yeah,
you know, you crank it out. Yeah, I mean, exactly. But you have to develop all mm-hmm. of those skills. You have to, you're developing the skill of writing good stories quickly.
Yep, exactly.
And publishing them. You're not developing the skill of locking yourself in an office and being frustrated.
Yeah. Yep.
Or wondering why you're not rich yet. Because
exactly.
And, you know, again, you're going to try and fail. Try fail cycle for the author themselves.
Yeah.
You're going to fail a lot, especially yeah. at first.
Yeah.
You know, I know your first book is your precious child, but mm-hmm. probably it's not the best book you'll ever write.
Yeah.
It might be the most important one because you did it.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's probably not going to be the most commercially successful, best read, best quality book you ever write.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Your 10th or 15th one had darn well better be better than your first one, or else yeah. you didn't learn anything.
Yep.
You should certainly always be learning something. So.
Anyway. Okay. Yeah. So that was our conclusion. Like, you studied craft, you studied story, you studied characters, and Chris and Dean both have some really fantastic classes on these very topics where they teach you how to write good stories. And I've heard very, very good things about those classes and workshops. And so, and yeah, so Dean actually, like I said, in that Nano Story Bundle book, storybundle.com/nano, he writes a book that's called, or he has a book that's called How to Write a Novel in 10 Days. Was that the title? I can't remember it now.
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, seriously, go grab that, figure out how he's doing it. And like Chris said, this is a muscle. This is something that once you start and doing, the more practice, the more you do it, the better you'll get at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the more efficient the words you put down become. You don't have to cut as much.
Exactly. You get efficient.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So like my books now, like I said, I only have to do one or two revisions on them because the words I use are efficient. And my first few novels, I was cutting and editing and so much work to be done. But now it's so much faster, you know, and that's exciting. And I'm pretty excited to see how things go, you know, see where things go from now. Cause I've written one book in the last month. I'm hoping to get this one done fast too, you know, get as much written before this baby comes as possible. Now, the one instructor that I wish that I'd had the chance to do a live video with, Donna Cook, I'm just going to give a couple tips from her presentation. She talked about cash flow. And so basically cash flow is how to run a successful business and knowing where your money goes. And basically, like, if you know, it's paying attention to where your money needs to go, the bills you have to go out, and the money that you have coming in so that you don't accidentally spend the money before you've paid your bills. And her biggest points were, don't spend any money you do not have. Use only cash that you have on hand. Otherwise, your business will go bankrupt. Your business will fall apart. You can't be creative if you're stressing about how to pay for your next business thing. So know what you need to use the money and where it needs to go before you spend it, and then make sure you're always using cash. So cash flow. And one thing that I really liked that she said is, if you can't have $10 and not spend it, you'll never have $100. And if you can't have $100 and not spend it, you'll never have $1,000. And if you can't have $1,000 and never spend it, you'll never have $10,000. And a lot of the things that we do as indie authors require quite a bit of money, you know, audiobooks, if you don't want to do a 50-50 split royalty, and book covers and editing and marketing and stuff like that. So you've got to be paying attention to where your finances are going and just all of that. I mean, basically all of that. And Donna actually she's offering a discount to our listeners on a cash flow sheet that she built that does the work for her. And it is quite the intensive, awesome stuff where you copy paste in and the thing just knows exactly what to do. She was showing us how to use it at the conference, and it's awesome. You copy and paste information from your bank account, and the spreadsheet just puts in all these different tabs and things like that, so you can see where your money's going and all of that. And I'm not sure how much that discount is. I just got her text. But so if you're interested in Donna's spreadsheet, send her an email at contact@penrosehouse.com. And she can give you information on the spreadsheet and how to, and I know it's not that expensive. So basically how to cash flow your money. So I think that's pretty much it for today.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of good meat in those interviews. So, yeah, to reiterate what we said at the beginning, go to the Business Master class. It's incredibly valuable, and we'll talk next week about more what we actually learned so that you'll know if it's something you'll want to go to. And then storybundle.com/nano for the writing tools bundle curated by Kevin J. Anderson. And then Truly Epic Fantasy Bundle, which is also curated by Kevin, and that's at storybundle.com/fantasy. And then go and grab your, go get access to my Amazon Algorithms and Automation Sequences course that is just $10. That's www.selfpublishedstrongcourses.com. And yeah, that's all from me. If you have any questions, send me an email at andrea@selfpublishedstrong.com. But where can people find you?
You can find me at Art with Nolan on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Oh, good point. I forgot all about that.
Yeah. I do post to all three.
Automatically, right?
Uh-huh.
That's a good way to organize social media.
Yeah, exactly. Instagram just puts links on Twitter, which is dumb, so I had to have like a back-end thing where it actually posts the picture itself for my art instead of just a link to it.
Yeah.
Which is silly. So now everything should display. So the first few posts are just links, but then I realized that was what it was doing and fixed it. So everything's still not set up with my avatars and all that stuff necessarily the way I want it, but there are posts going to those locations, so yeah. You can reach me at any of them.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yes. Mostly Instagram, I guess.
But yeah, Instagram.
That's where I seem to be spending most of my time.
Instagram's funny. It's like people are fickle over there. And I've talked to people and this is the way they say it is. Like people follow you and then unfollow you, then follow you, then
so
unfollow you.
So don't follow and then unfollow me. Just don't follow me or follow me.
Yeah. We've been like, okay, look, hey, your number of followers stayed the same, even though you got two more followers.
I know, yeah. I'm like, hey, I just got a bunch of followers. Oh, it's still the same.
Same number. Hey,
just what you just said. But yeah, it was kind of like every day.
Yeah.
You got three more followers. Oh, how many do I have now? Oh,
the same. Yeah, so, but he's getting a lot of compliments on his art. You seriously need to go check that out. He's got some pretty awesome pieces up.
Yeah, mainly Halloween themed because it was Halloween.
Yeah.
Or Drawloween or Inktober, depending on who you are.
Yeah.
I guess it doesn't matter who you are. That's still a thing that happened.
It's true.
Anyway. Go see that stuff.
Yeah.
Their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's old stuff that we dug up, but a lot of it's new.
Yeah.
And old stuff doesn't mean it's bad because I was good like 10 years ago still.
So. Yeah, he was. Yeah. No, he's been good for many years.
Yes.
He's been an adult
for years. If I don't say so myself. it's not like old, like I'm a kid. It's like I've graduated from college.
And yeah, old. Yeah. No, 10 years ago, he was, well out of college. So.
I was out of college for like 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was competent at the time and art was a major I had for a while. So it's not.
Yep.
It's not stick figures.
No.
As much as it was back then.
When you were six.
Yeah, not even then. I didn't even do really that. I went for it.
Good. Like our 5-year-old.
Yeah, she gets pretty crazy with stuff.
She decorated her house for Halloween. She put up a whole bunch of ghosts boo.
We're not very festive, so she remedied that by making a bunch of things.
Yep.
So I was like, draw something scary for Halloween. She's like, okay. And then goes and draws a shark.
So cute.
And some jellyfish.
Which, you know, shark and jellyfish, sharks and jellyfish, they are scary.
She's not wrong. I was like, okay, how about scary cat? She's like, cats aren't scary.
So funny.
Like, you know, the one with their backs arched and they're like, you know, like
and
that.
She's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I had to show her and she's like, oh.
Yeah, and I showed her pictures of witches.
Yeah, and ghosts.
And ghosts.
So things became more Halloween.
Yep.
Eat more Halloween-y.
Yeah.
Is that a word? Yeah. Instead of just plain scary.
Yeah.
So that was amusing.
All right. So I guess that's it for this week, right?
Yep.
Okay, we'll talk to you all later. Bye. Bye.